Jaguars Digital. Jaguars. Jaguars Digital. Jaguars Drive Time. Ryan Sexton, John Osier, Ashlyn Sullivan. Jaguars Drive Time starts right now.
Welcome into Jags Drive Time on this Tuesday morning. Big week ahead, getting ready for the NFL draft that starts on Thursday. Ashlyn Sullivan, welcome in, along with Jags senior writer John Osier. Brian currently on a plane to Dallas, getting ready for the NFL draft. He'll have live content starting on Wednesday, but first we have to address something. Johnny O did something to his face.
I cut myself shaved, so I was a little late getting in here, and you could have seen the horrified look on the lady at the Speedway who was checking me out while I was gushing blood. It's been a morning. We're ready to talk football.
Oh, good.
So, and this takes away from my usual striking appearance.
Right.
So
I apologize for that. You still look okay.
Oh, your fault.
Yeah. I mean, it blends in. I figured we just had to bring it up, though. I didn't want people wondering.
I'm a bloody mess.
All right. Are you ready to work a lot again this week?
I've been ready.
Yeah?
I've been ready.
You worked a lot last week. I know you were upset about it.
Yeah, work is not my thing, so I decided to cut myself. So that's how I roll. So, yeah, we're ready. Let's go.
All right. Let's head into big thing one. Thursday, day one, round one. The past 10 years, the Jags have picked in the top 10. This year's a little bit different, picking 29. So on Friday, Tom Coughlin, Dave Caldwell, and Doug Marrone all talked at the pre-annual draft luncheon. They all said one thing, picking best available. Here's what they had to say.
Well, those are the things we're going through right now. We tried to be as proactive as we could to fill every need that we could in free agency. So when we got to this point at 29, we could take the best player available. If there's three or four guys there, you start to look at value of positions.
Then it would definitely be the best player, because if you didn't have an outrageous need anywhere, then obviously you take the best player available.
We can go out and play. I'm happy about that. So, you know, I feel good about the players that we have right now. You know, whatever happens with the draft, whoever we acquire, hey, listen, we welcome them to our team, and we hope that they can help us win. And that's really how I look at it.
So, Zone, it's interesting that they all said regardless where they're picking, it really doesn't change that much. I mean, 10 to 29 is a big drop there, but they said they're kind of handling it the same way.
Yeah, it's easy before the draft to get very idealistic about best available player. The reality is there's always sort of a best available player and a need axis, if you will, where you're probably not going to take the best available if you're three deep at a position with all three guys in their rookie contract. Mm-hmm. But right now for the Jaguars, they are in a situation where they don't have to force the pick. If they get to 29 and feel like wide receiver is there, or a wide receiver is a spot on the roster they'd like to improve, for example, they're good enough there where they don't have to reach for a guy where they're saying, boy, there's only a 25% chance that this guy is going to be worth this pick. Mm-hmm. So let's go the other direction. So the fact that they're, as Dave Caldwell said on Friday, their roster is set where they can go line up and play, which it hasn't always been when they've been here, meaning they being the Dave Caldwell regime. So they have a chance to go and pick the closest thing to best available that you can. And to me, that's why defense, safety, possibly defensive end, is a much higher possibility than most of the mock drafts you see at the end of round one.
I mean, you don't see any defensive players on mock drafts right now. So you think that is a high possibility.
And that's because, you know, I do the same thing. When I do a mock draft, I look at a team need, and I look at the best player available there at that, you know, one of two or three needs, and you slot a guy there. So it takes a very in-depth knowledge of the way the Jaguars think to put them with a defensive player. Because when you look at if you look at their depth chart, you say, well, they could use a guard, or a tight end is clearly a spot because they let Mercedes Lewis go. And even though they got Safarian Jenkins, you could still package that. So the spots that are getting mocked are wide receiver, line, and tight end. They all make sense. And to me, I would still put those percentages higher. Mm-hmm. But if you never know how they're grading players. So if you get to a situation where they have the best tight end is here, but a defensive end slips to him and he's up here, in some cases you would be forced to take the tight end because you don't have a guy.
Right.
They've got enough of a guy where they can go take a player if they think he's going to be special. And at the end of the day in the first round, over need, you want a guy who you think has a chance to be a good player in this league for 8 years.
Right. And I thought it was funny, Tuck said, this is a great problem to have, picking 29, not having to worry about it too much. Best player available.
I mean, it's exactly what you want. And you know, the problem, of course, is your percentages of getting greatness are much greater in the top 10 than at 29. But that's why at 29, at some point, it is a good idea to go away from need and just take the guy you feel best about, because at some point, the guy's going to be on the field somewhere. And as the old saying goes, you can never have enough good players, even if you've got the same guy, or even if the good players are all at the same spot.
So you look at last year's free agency and this year's free agency. Doug, when he talked on Friday, it almost seemed like he wasn't treating the draft as big of a deal as he had in the past, because they've done so well in free agency.
Yeah, they have, and it has obviously helped them build their team. At the same time, right now the draft becomes, again, very critical for these guys, because they're not going to be able to go and sign a Calais Campbell, Marcell Dareus, who was a trade, but you're not going to be able to make veteran moves. Malik Jackson, Barry Church, Tashaun Gibson, A.J. Boye. This defense has been largely built through free agency with some draft picks mixed in. You can't continue to do that, because at some point your really good players have to have a four-year stretch where you're not paying them the $39, $45 million guaranteed for over 3 years. So it's been nice, but it would strike you that you're not going to be able to have a class similar to Boye, Church, and Campbell last year, where you had such a huge influx of free agents. So you've got to draft well.
Right. And speaking of importance, round two and three are really important for the Jags recently. That's going into big thing two. Day two, round two and three. You look at guys that they picked recently, Miles Jack being one of them, Marquise Lee, Yannick Ngakoue, Brandon Leonard, Cam Robinson last year. John, they've killed two and three rounds.
Well, if nothing else, the 2016 draft, if I'm remembering the year right, Jalen Ramsey, Yannick Ngakoue,
Miles
Jack. And Miles Jack was second, and Ngakoue was third. Nobody else is left on the team from that draft. Mm-hmm. At the same time, it's an epically good draft, because you got those three guys, and it's the second and third round. Jalen Ramsey obviously has the look of a Hall of Fame, Pride of the Jaguars type player, but it wouldn't be considered a great draft if it wasn't for the presence of the second and third. Mm-hmm. So again, it shows you Ngakoue and Jack make that a great draft, even though you've got nobody left from the others.
Right, and you look at how well they nailed that 2016 draft. Is that even possible to do that again?
Well, it's possible. It's a very, very low percentage chance, because you had a guy like Miles Jack who should have been a top 10 pick. He was a top 10 talent. And you had Ngakoue, who it's hard to envision a third round pick coming out of nowhere and being a Pro Bowl player. You're talking about a draft that has two Pro Bowl players, along with a guy who I think will be in the Pro Bowl next year, Miles Jack. When you couple it with the 2014 draft, where you had, I think it's six guys who signed second contracts with some team, that's unbelievably good drafting in those 2 years, and it's a huge reason they were in the championship game last year.
So you look at last year and this year, and Cam Robinson last year, rounds two and three, what do you envision for this year? Still best player available?
For this year, you know, if I had to choose, I think they're going offensive line in the first round, because when you're projecting a draft, I can't sit here and say, well, they're going to take best available, because that's boring.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say offensive line. And I think they come back in the second round with tight end, because the tight ends in this draft, it's a good tight end draft, but it's not a great tight end draft. Mm. That means you have a very good percentage chance of no more than one of the guys being gone at 29, which means there's a good percentage chance they could slip down to the end of the second round for them. So I say, yeah, tight end in the second round. And it's intriguing what they will do in round three to me if that scenario plays out. Do they start looking at the defense? Do they start trying to replace guys in 2019 at that spot? Or do they go running back, where an argument could be made that with Leonard Fournette, the way he plays, he's going to probably not be in every 16 regular season games. Do you need a guy who can be a starter for three or four games in place of him? I think they go that route somewhere, maybe round three, but probably round four.
So looking at mock drafts recently, it looks like a ton are going first round wide receiver. So you don't even think that is addressed in round three.
You know, it feels from their visits like that's a middle of the draft position for them. It also feels like stylistically it's a middle of the draft position for them, meaning they are a run-focused team who seems like it's going to try to get the wide receiver position done with four or five really good players as opposed to one great, great, great player. So being that there doesn't feel like there is an elite guy going to slip to them at 29, a wide receiver, makes more sense to go around three or four. The X factor there, if Calvin Ridley from Alabama would slip, which some mocks have him slipping, that could be tempting enough to go ahead and use that pick. And that, again, is what on Friday, Tom and Dave both talked about. When you're at 29, you know historically somebody is going to slide that you don't expect. That's why you have to be ready. It's why you have to approach the draft the same way you would if you were in the top 10. Is one of those guys who slips a guy that they feel like makes sense for them? That's the mystery of the draft going in.
I mean, you can definitely see it happening with all those teams reaching for those quarterbacks.
Well, you got teams reaching for quarterbacks, and you've also got an expected, you know, you have Quentin Nelson up there. He's definitely going to go. You have Derwin James. You have Saquon Barkley. You have Chubb. So you've basically got 10 or 11 spots in front of you that you know are going to be guys who are in that realm. That leaves 18 spots for somebody to sort of slip down to you, which easily could happen.
All right, Zone, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll have Big Thing 3 ready and some Ozone Snapshot. We'll call it that since Brian's not here. I know you get upset about that.
Yeah, I'm more upset about my chin right now.
Okay. We'll see you back here in a minute.
What do you call a pack of Jaguars? A jamboree. The Jacksonville Jaguars want to offer a big thank you to the five local companies who've made the Jaguars Jamboree a party that never stops. Everbank, Baptist Health, Dreamfinders Homes, Publix, and U.S. Assure. Each of these partners provides unmatched support and dedication to the team year in and year out and help make game day special. Jaguars fans, join the Jamboree and support these companies and all the partners who support the team.
Jags fans, experience Everbank Field like never before. Visit jaguars.com/tours and book a guided behind-the-scenes tour. Hear stories of great plays by Jaguars legends. Get up close and personal with the famous video boards. And see why the Travel Channel named Everbank Field as one of the 15 bucket list destinations for any football fan. Discounts available for children, first responders, and military. Visit jaguars.com/tours for tickets and details. See you at the bank.
Don't miss the Jaguars uniform launch and draft party presented by PRI Productions on Thursday, April 26th at Daly's Place. Register for free at jaguars.com/draftparty18 for the chance to see the defending AFC South champions wearing our new uniforms live on stage. Gates open at 6:30 when the live show kicks off with expert analysis, performances by the Roar and D-Line, and player autographs. Be the first to try on a new jersey and purchase your own at the Jaguars Pro Shop. Then watch the team select the newest Jaguar with the 29th pick. Registration is free at jaguars.com. So get your tickets today.
Welcome back to Jags Drive Time on this Tuesday morning here with Big Thing 3. So when you look at the cap space next season, you know that rounds 4 through 7 are extremely important getting young talent. You look at someone like Telvin Smith who dropped to the 5th round, John. They took a chance on him because of his size. A lot of people said that he would play safety. He ended up being the leader on your defense.
Well, and realistically, in rounds 4 through 7, if you get one guy out of that bunch, or two guys, one of them who's a special team, a solid backup, and another one who's a starter, plays 4 or 5 years for you, that's great in rounds 4 through 7. We make a lot of it, and they're very important. They usually wind up being depth and special teams and playing for you in a pinch. If you can get one guy who, I mean, if you can get one Telvin Smith, obviously it's a home run. But if you can even get one guy who contributes over a 4 or 5 year period, who you really like, who you really feel good about, then that's good in those rounds. And, you know, they're in a situation when you don't have to draft those spots for need and can truly go best available, or when you can pick your spots, meaning if you can go running back there, if you can go a blocking tight end, if you can go, I think that's where they probably go pick up linebacker, a guy to play 30-35% of the snaps in the strong side role. Something like that, if you're going for situations rather than trying to get your rock stars, then you're okay in the 4th and 7th round.
And speaking of that, with undrafted free agents, Andrew Norwell, A.J. Boye, huge guys on this team, how do you go about, when the draft is over, looking at those type of guys?
Well, you do it the same way that you do the draft, and you just have to be really good, and you have to be really lucky. I used to joke that it was basically darts at a board in free agency. It's not that. But at the same time, you are talking about guys who 32 teams passed on seven times.
Right.
So it's easy to say, yes, we knew Allen Hurns was going to be the kind of player he was. Andrew Norwell, Boye, Church, Sean Gibson, all these guys went undrafted. Well, if there was a formula for figuring it out, none of those guys would have been undrafted. They would have been first-round picks because they clearly showed they were worthy of that. So it's scouting. It's being very aggressive on the Saturday night after the draft. It's going after the guys you want, and it's knowing that you are going after these 16, 17 guys with the hope that maybe two of them make your team and maybe one of them turns into Keelan Cole.
And you talked about rounds 4 through 7 going linebacker. Where else do you see them looking at?
Well, it's historically a special teams depth area for the most part. That's where you're realistically going to be able to get value and impact early. With the focus they had on special teams in free agency, I would expect them to find probably a secondary guy, probably a linebacker, maybe even two guys in the secondary. And at that point, you know, I do still wonder if late in the draft or as an unrestricted free agent, I'm meaning a rookie free agent, if they don't go punter, just to see if they can find somebody to push Norman.
All right. Are you ready for Ozone Snapshot?
Oh, I've been ready.
Even the chin?
Oh.
Have you forgotten about it? Sorry to bring it up.
No, hashtag never forget.
You're so hip. All right, let's do Ozone number one. Neil from UK. Dear Mr. O, do mock drafts have any validity? Or are they a bit of a lark? Do Dave Caldwell and Sir Tom of Coughlin pay any heed to them?
Well, they're a lark because if you're putting most mock drafts up on the board and you check them with what actually happens, you might get 3 or 4 or 5, at the most 7 or 8 right. So it's tough to call them anything more than 3 months of fun, if you consider that kind of thing fun. At the same time, there are teams, and most teams will take a look at a mass of mock drafts. They'll get 7 or 8 respected mock drafts. They'll put them on the board, and they'll try to figure out how the draft might go because they're wanting outside opinions. They're wanting to make sure that they're not looking at it and sort of seeing the draft in their own silo. So they will look at the mock drafts, and generally speaking, they'll just get a feel for what might happen, certain scenarios. They try to go into the draft with 7 or 8 scenarios of how it might play out. In that sense, they're used, they're not ignored, but nobody is sitting there on draft day saying, well, you know what, Peter King's got us taken so-and-so at 29. Let's go ahead and go that route. They're not that important, but they do give you an idea of what's being said and what the buzz is out there.
Do you think Doug and Tom and Dave, do you think they even look at them once?
Well, again, I think teams have their research people research what's out there. I don't know that Tom's on his smartphone looking at my mock draft.
I can't see it, yeah.
So it's used in as analytical a way as possible. But again, I don't think Tom's sitting on the porch at night scrolling around the phone looking for mock drafts.
I think he's got better things to do.
Dave might be, though.
Yeah, I could see that. So. He strikes me as one of those.
He's that guy.
All right, let's go up to New Jersey. Scott, Big O, what about Taven Bryan at number 29 if he is still on the board? Scouts are comparing him to J.J. Watt and Fletcher Cox. I know defensive line is not a top priority, but he may be the best player available in the late first round. You chose this because of the Florida Gators.
Well, because you like your Gators, I guess.
I knew it.
So, you're wearing your orange Gator dress. So, I don't know if it'll be Taven Bryan. It's so hard to know who might slide. The point of the question was, could a defensive player be the guy at 29? As we discussed earlier, I think that's a real possibility if value defensively slides. If they've got a guy, we think this kid's the 15th best player in the draft. If a defensive player like that slides to 29, then you look at it and say, can we replace a Calais Campbell, Malik Jackson, Marcel Darius? Is this going to be the next guy that we can slide in there? The reality is one of those guys I just mentioned probably isn't going to be here in 2019. So if you think that there's a defensive lineman, edge rusher, defensive tackle who is a next Aaron Donald type guy, then go ahead and take that at that spot because those guys are rare at 29, and if they're there, take them.
And when you're looking at the cap space issue that they're going to face next season, do they treat that more importantly when they're looking at the next season?
Well, it's something you have to take into account, and to me, that's the great unknown of this draft. Are they looking at this draft as a way to build 2019 through 21, knowing they're going to have cap issues, or are they? And in that case, you probably go defense.
Right.
Or are they saying, let's look at our offensive line, let's look at our offense, let's go there in the first and second round. On the offensive line, you've got a situation where with Norwell, Robinson, Linder, and if you draft somebody, all of a sudden you've got those guys for 2 or 3 years. Mm-hmm. So if you draft that, you are automatically turning that into your core, whereas last year and this year, your core was your defense.
Right.
If you draft offensive line, you're saying by the year 2019 and 2020, this running game thing that was first in the league last year but not dominant at the end, we're expecting that to be our calling card and what our franchise is built around. So to me, it's a direction of the franchise type draft.
All right, let's stay local in Jacksonville. Steve, so if we had actually made it to the Super Bowl, do you think the schedule would be much different? There but for one quarter of football and a long fourth down conversion goes primetime.
I don't know. I mean, I chose this because everybody's picking apart the schedule. And
yep.
Everybody craves and wants primetime games so bad. To me, they've got two primetime games. They've got a London game that's going to be on national TV. And they've got two more games on CBS that are going to be national profile type games. I suppose if they could have... The answer is yes. If they'd been in the Super Bowl, they would probably have another Monday night game, another Sunday night game, because the profile of that game is a big difference. As it is, they've got five. If they make the Super Bowl, they'll play three more high-profile games. That's eight. Pretty good year for a team that had one last year going into the playoffs. So, yes, but I just can't worry about it.
Yeah. And
I got bigger worries today. I got a lot going on.
On Friday, it was funny. Doug was saying he almost likes it, where it's your team, where you know you're playing every Sunday at 1 o'clock. He said, I know how my week is like. If I play on a Thursday this week and a Monday next week, it's everywhere.
Oh, make no mistake. Football people, me, anybody over the age of 40, a 1 o'clock home game's great. You know what's better? A 9 a.m. home game. Let's just get them done. I mean, and I kid about that because that's what writers always want. The earlier, the better. But football people... The worst thing in the world for a football team is to be out of schedule. So you don't want Thursday, Monday, Sunday night. You want 1 o'clock home games. Now, you don't want that because it means you weren't any good the previous year.
Right.
So that's always the great rub. You figure out a way to adapt it. But there is, when you're a good team, there is a real challenge of adapting to a, you know, you're playing on Thanksgiving. You're playing on Thursday night a couple of times. You're playing on Sunday night. Football teams are... areas of habit. Mm-hmm. They don't like that, but you take the bad with the good when you're that good.
And especially when you're not used to it coming off a season like that.
Yeah, and it's going to be a difference, and it's probably good for this team, frankly, that they've only got one Thursday game, mm-hmm. only one game where the schedule is really, really chaotic. They're good at it, adapting because of the London game, I think, mm-hmm. but overall, you would rather have all Sunday games.
All right, I agree. Let's do the last one from Ponte Vedra Beach. Oto, John, which player in this year's draft would have the most immediate positive influence on our team? Even though we are at number 29, I would be interested in your answer. That's so nice of him to say he's interested in your
answer. Well, it's some people throw me a bone every now and then. I'm going to say Will Hernandez, the guard from UTEP, only because the way this team wants to play, they want to be big, they want to be physical. They want to be what Dallas was in 2016, and that was a team at the time that could turn around and give Zeke the ball and get 6 yards a carry. This wasn't that team last year. That's what they would like to be, a guard of some kind, somebody who could truly create a situation where Fournette is getting 4 yards and then figuring out what he's going to do after that. That would be a huge impact. When you talk about impact, receivers and skill guys are always going to make the biggest impact in terms mm-hmm. of fantasy, in terms of SportsCenter highlights. But for this team, a great interior lineman, if you're getting a guy who can be in the Pro Bowl, if you're getting a guy who can make Linder, Norwell, and that guy the best interior in football, that would be impact for this team.
So that's your call, O-line, 29.
Yeah, it's going to be my call because I can't think of anything better. You know, and with the draft, that's the reality. You're always guessing, especially at 29, you don't know. To me, it feels like this team, the way Doug Marrone coaches, the way Tom GMs, they want to be great on the line. They want to be able to turn around and give Fournette the ball and not have guys at his feet 1 yard deep into the line of scrimmage. If they can do that, they'll feel like it's a good draft.
All right, Zone. Good call. Good job dealing with that chin and everything.
I'm a little lightheaded, a little woozy, so I'm going to go lie down for a while.
We don't need you passing out here. That's
no,
a
nobody
lawsuit.
Wants that.
All right. Thanks so much for tuning into Jags Drive Time. We'll have Jaguars.com live tomorrow with Brian in Dallas, Jags Thursday on the radio, and then the draft Thursday night. Can't forget it. Thanks for tuning in.